Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. You heard Javi Baez there. And you heard the professor kind of talking himself out of the rivalry, talking him into it. Well, they're our biggest rival by far.
They're for real. Brewers are for real. The rivalry is alive. I think it is.
Brewers are good, man.
It's certainly fluid, conversation. Good. They're good. They're very good.
Those two outfielders are so good that it makes them slump proof.
Yelich and Kane?
They're just too damn good. And they got two of them. And it makes them slump-proof.
They've done a nice job of supplementing their team as well this season at the trade deadline. You saw last night Curtis Granderson, a valuable asset. But, you know, Molly, watching last night, the biggest takeaway, as much respect as you have for the Brewers, the one thing you come away with is almost like an intimidation factor. And I'm not saying that you heard it in Javi in his voice, but saying he doesn't want to face the Brewers, that's kind of – I understand that. Josh Hader, wow. He was compared earlier in the week to Chris Sale. I thought Aroldis Chapman when I was watching him last night. That's the last time you think of dominant left-handed relievers who can control and take over a game like that. And the guy who just you go to when you need him to do something like did in this series. The 10 batters he faced, 9 strikeouts. Ben Zobrist got a hit off him, but did you see the first swing that Zobrist took against Hader? I have never seen Ben Zobrist look that bad at the plate. He was expecting a 97-mile-per-hour heater, and he got a breaking pitch, and he was so out in front of it was funny.
Yeah, yeah. It's
dominant.
But they don't, you know, I still don't understand why they didn't get any starting pitching. I just don't get that. If they had a dominant starter, then it would be a different story. If you felt like they had someone that
they've tried.
I mean, they haven't tried.
Weren't
David.
They in
no,
on?
They were in on everyone. That's not trying. Close is
fair point.
Horseshoes fair and hand point. Grenades, right?
And that ultimately could be what gets in the way of them overtaking the Cubs or them making any sort of statement or going far in October. Maybe they're that one ace type pitcher away from being a legitimate threat in the playoffs.
I tell you what, you know, the thing that kind of worries you about the position the Cubs are in right now is, again, they're on the road today. It's just a tough situation. Mike Montgomery against Joe Ross, as you mentioned, Ross. It was going to be a Scherzer start, and they switched that around. So they catch Joe Ross, which is a lot better than Max Scherzer. But you still have to do that. You come back, and then it's Matt Harvey against Cole Hamels. That is a game I'm really looking forward to because I got to see Cole Hamels be the August Cole Hamels. I was thinking about this the other day, and I'm, you know, Cole Hamels was just absolutely turned back the clock, got in the time machine. He was fantastic when he first arrived here. And I think that we've seen a little chink in the armor the last couple starts.
A little bit.
What I'm hoping is that Cole Hamels is going to be a guy that wins you two when you get into the playoffs. He's the kind of guy that can
game
do
one,
that.
Game one, game five.
He's the kind of guy that can come back and win a couple, even if it's game two
or game one, game four, six, game seven,
whatever it is. But he's got that possibility,
yeah. And he can be your Verlander.
And I just don't want that to fade away.
You have high
before
expectations,
it starts.
But he raised them by the way he pitched, and I think Friday night. In the lights against Matt Harvey, that's going to be a moment. You feel like he has risen to the occasion. Here's the thing that when you hear Javi Baez's voice, though, concerns you. He sounds and looks tired.
He does look tired.
September 2nd against the Phillies, the Cubs beat Aaron Nola. They opened up a 5-game lead in the division. Javi had his 30th homer and his 100th RBI, and we were talking MVP, MVP. You know what? Here we are.
Yep.
10 days later, 11 days later, he's still stuck at 30 homers and 100 RBIs. His slump has coincided with the Cubs not hitting. it typically goes that way when you have an MVP type player go into a slump. He's got to get hot. Daniel Murphy's got to get hot again. These are the guys at the top of the order that have to do this because they have stopped hitting and they have not been the same team over the last 10 days.
312-644-6767. A lot of people want to check in. We'll start with Tommy's in Elgin. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah, you guys can hear me, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you guys are missing Lloyd Pettit.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
one of the greatest announcers. And he's got your name in it, the score. Shot the score.
That's a good one, Tom.
That's a good one, Tom. Yeah.
Generationally, I think a lot of people forget how good
Dustin,
he was.
Dustin would have had him if he answered the question.
If he actually did
that's
his homework.
That's going to be our defense for everyone we miss.
Yeah.
Frank's in Lakeview. Hi, Frank.
Hey, Frank.
Hi. You know, I hope. I mean, I assume he's not listening. I mean, I'm sure Hawk Harrelson is a fine man. Maybe he's generous. I don't know if he's good to his wife or whatever. But this revisionist history about Ken Harrelson is driving me crazy. Every year for so many years, I'm old. Every year for so many years, I would get so excited about watching the Sox, you know, open their season. I get so excited. And then I turn the TV on and I'm like, oh, that's right. And I'd try, you know, hooking the radio to it and stuff. Hawk Harrelson, I think, is responsible for some of the decline of people watching the White Sox, because he is so annoying, and so many of us have felt like that over the years. And all of a sudden, everybody's on this bandwagon. That's, I don't want to have to say that, but that's all I got.
Frank Hawk will be on this morning at 8:20 if you want to hear him again.
He's so bad, and he's so annoying that people just can't stop watching.
Matt is in River North. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah, I got to echo what that guy just said.
Oh, come on!
But I will tell you this. How come you guys don't bring up DeShays? I think he's an excellent analyst.
Okay.
Okay, you want him on your Mount Rushmore?
DeShays is a great guy.
Well, I mean, yeah. I think the difference between him and Hawk is, you know, he actually analyzes the game. He doesn't tell you how great Todd Frazier is, and he's better than Chris Bryant, and he doesn't tell you stuff like that. He tells you like it is. And he actually will, like, he criticized Dylan Maples. He'll actually give you.
You mean the unflappable Dylan Maples? He criticized Dylan Maples?
Yeah, you can't go after him. That's not allowed in baseball. Yeah, I don't know, Matt. I mean, I think that. And I.
Hawk is not for everybody. We can all accept that. He is certainly a guy that turns as many people off as
Pleases. In Lakeview, maybe a guy in River North. I don't know. I don't know.
Do you buy the previous caller, Sox fan, who said that
he's in Lakeview. He said he was a Sox fan.
You think Hawk has kept
I think most of the Sox fans, I don't think Sox fan interest?
No.
I think most of the people in Lakeview are Cubs fans, is what I think. I just think that this thing could melt down along the lines of the teams that you watch. I think this is what I'm trying to say. A lot of judging broadcasters comes down to,
it's totally subjective.
Well, it's also who you're watching the game with. And I think that it's hard to say that a football broadcaster with 16 games a year, whatever, 20 with the preseason, can ever be there with you for a guy doing 100 and whatever.
You're exactly right. Baseball is a different relationship, especially radio and baseball. There's an intimate relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Pat Hughes is a guy who, to me,
we didn't mention Pat Hughes.
Pat Hughes, to me, his voice is sort of part of the soundtrack of summer for a lot of baseball fans in Chicago. You mentioned about 30 people.
You didn't mention anyone.
You can't speak
you
now.
Passed.
Yeah.
You passed
you
on the question.
You lost the right to have a voice in this
hypocrite.
Discussion.
You have no opinion.
Pat
We've already
Hughes.
Established that you can't make a decision.
Pat first time for everything.
And you, what do you mean first time for everything?
That I didn't have an opinion.
No, oh, wrong, no. Wrong. You just, you lay out the groundwork of how you have to do this, and have to do that, and then you just say, well, we're low on time.
But you know what? I feel bad that I didn't mention Pat Hughes before, because that was a tough one. He was like number five for me.
Really?
And he's terrific. I mean, really, he's one of those guys that you listen to and just seems like,
He has a cadence and a voice for baseball. It's perfect.
And he tells stories with the best
of them. It's perfect.
Yeah.
312-644-6767. What?
We get a texter, too, that doesn't like Pat Hughes, because it just proves your point. Everything about your favorite broadcaster is just so subjective.
Mully and Haw on the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We got a lot of people here now, that is September, so you know, we're just trying to do our best to take off. And you know, I feel like that's coming soon. So, you know, hopefully we just keep working and we'll take off.
Mulligan Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. That is Javi Baez saying he's not tired.
Yep. Well, I understand that. I don't want him to say he's tired. I don't want him to think he's tired. Look, 24 hours ago, one game earlier, we were just talking about, boy, didn't Javi just create another run? Isn't he exciting? He forced a throw to second base. He drew a walk. He's inside the pitcher's head. He's doing all the things that make Javi Javi. And 24 hours, he's overly fatigued. And that I don't know. I mean, look, we change based on the outcome the night before. We change our opinions. It's fluid. But I don't – he's got to be fatigued to a point, but it can't let it get in the way now. You can't let that if you're the Cubs. You can't talk yourselves into
being tired.
Yeah,
you can't. I mean, listen, is it unfortunate that their day off is spent in Washington with a makeup game after they sat at the ballpark all day, all weekend, basically? More hours spent waiting for rain than spent playing baseball? It's unfortunate. But that's the reality of the situation. 312-644-6767. Ming is on the road, as he always is. Ming!
Good morning, Ming.
How are you, buddy?
Morning, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Good.
First of all, putting Harry on the rush bar is like putting Gilbert Gottfried up there. Now, all year long, you keep hearing how the Cubs had this versatile lineup of players that could play multiple positions.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to the management taking and having somebody give guys days off every 7 to 10 days, moving his most versatile players around. They give guys a day off here and there. They don't play 30 and 30.
Yeah,
this isn't Leo DeRocha.
But Ming, he's been doing that. The problem is that the injuries have kind of robbed him.
Yeah, but you don't have guys playing. You don't have the same eight playing every day like DeRocha did, and they were exhausted.
That's
and
right.
Tired.
Well, and even Joe acknowledged that with the expanded roster, that's made it a little bit easier to deal with than if this were in July, when you had 30 scheduled games in 30 days in a time when you didn't have a 40-man roster. He does have more flexibility, but the players he's using might not be the players who were best suited for those roles.
You know, few of us remember 1969. I don't. I'm sure you do. I'm sure a lot of people weren't born that are listening to us now. I'm saying that was baseball and sunshine. That was the same lineup being run out there day after day. That was the miracle Mets were also the exhausted Cubs, right? So that's a different era. This is not that. This is a team that it got rained out a bunch earlier in the year and then had some misfortune and now has all these games in a row.
And
it's totally different deal.
This is not a team playing day after day of day baseball.
Yes, exactly.
Getting sapped by the sunlight. And I think that you see a lot of people not having a ton of sympathy for Major League Baseball players who are millionaires.
Of course.
Taking chartered jets and living in 5-star hotels.
Yeah, those guys had a different deal. It was a lot. Things were different.
I'm not sure you can compare 1969 to 2018.
Tom is on the road. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Tom.
Hi. A couple things about your announcers. I think you're confusing who's a good announcer and who's a personality.
Okay.
Aren't they one in the same often?
Harry Carey and Hawk, they're personalities, but mm-hmm. they're terrible announcers. You turn the game on, you can watch them, but Hawk, there's 30 seconds of nothing, and they go, ball. Another 30 seconds, strike. You didn't know who was up. You didn't know what was going on. Harry, he may have been a good announcer with the Cardinals, but not with the Cubs. And I'm a Cubs fan, and I couldn't stand him. As far as Jack Brickhouse, if you don't know who Jack Brickhouse is, I mean, he did the Cubs, the Sox, the Bears, the Bulls.
Yes.
And he did them all very well. If you don't put him on your Mount Rushmore, if you don't know who he is, I don't think you have a vote.
Fair enough.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
You know, you raise a pretty interesting point, and I know what he's saying. You know, the guys who become larger than life, sometimes the mechanics of the broadcast aren't always the emphasis of the broadcast.
I mean, again,
what's the score? What's the count? What's the
how do you look at it? See, the way that I looked at it was who are the guys that I watch the most games with? That's what it came down to.
Who are your friends?
Who are the people that I've
that
watched?
Over
the
more
years,
friendly with. Yeah.
Jack Brickhouse has to be up there because of exactly what he just said. I mean, I'm smart enough to know that. I watched a lot of games that Brickhouse did. Harry Carey was on both sides of town. I watched games with Harry. I remember Harry when he was a Sox fan and a Falstaff man. Before he became a Cub fan and a Bud man.
Jimmy Pearsall.
I watched Terry and Jimmy. Yes, yeah. That was unbelievable.
Yeah, Jack Brickhouse is always going to be special to me because he's the guy who sort of introduced me to baseball when I'm a kid and kind of you came Absolutely. Home from school like so many people in the Midwest, so many kids in the Midwest, and you turned on the Cubs and there was Jack Brickhouse.
Cubs were always on during the day when
Lou
you came Boudreaux, home from school.
And the good kid, yeah. And they Sox were talking night. To yeah. you like that you were like he was in your living room teaching you baseball and the game and hey, and all those things. So it's very subjective. You look for different things. There are a lot of people that like the modern broadcasters because they are so into analytics. They're into the mechanics of the broadcast, but maybe they don't have as big, that larger than life personality that the old school, old time broadcasters used to have.
Yeah, I have watched so many games with Hawk. It's hard to not enjoy
love
it.
Hawk.
Yeah, I love Hawk. Of course I do.
I hate the modern broadcaster. All these names that we're talking about, the majority of them would never get hired by a team today. That's unfortunate. There a lot of if you watch games around, say you turn on MLB Network on an afternoon, they're showing a national game with a local broadcast. A lot of them cookie cutter. They're all the same.
Yeah, and you know, Hawk was so homespun, and he had like his own language, and I hear that language when I'm watching baseball.
Wouldn't get hired today. Hawk would not get hired in 2018.
No shot. There's no chance that he would. He made me love the Sox. I was just talking about this with Rick Camp. I mean, when you're excited about bums like Warren Newsom because he's got a cool nickname or Craig Graybeck, like, man, are you selling the team?
How about one dog?
Exactly.
Mercy.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mulliott Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the score. Jerry DiNardo is more than just a coach, more than just a man doing analysis. He is a life coach to us. Good morning, Jerry. How
morning,
are you?
Morning, Jerry.
I was better before I knew that.
We follow your advice all the time, and I think your insight's unbelievable, Jerry. Especially now, looking at this Ohio State game, this is the one, right? This is the one that everybody says will be the toughest one without Urban Meyer. They've opened up this offense. Would Urban go along with that? Is he on board with this? Is this quarterback now in the Heisman contention? I mean, it's amazing what we've seen with these guys.
Well, I would say, yeah. I mean, of the first three games, there's no doubt that this is the toughest game. It's on the road and all that. Well, Urban, if I had a choice, guys, of having Urban there on Saturday or all during the week, I would take him all during the week. There's much more that goes into a game plan and strategy and getting a team ready Monday through Friday than there is Saturday. I mean, my goodness. I mean, Urban doesn't play. Does everybody know that? He doesn't get out there and play. I mean, he was a baseball player at Cincinnati. And so, you know, Ryan Day's got different challenges this week. But, you know, the fact that Urban was there all week. The biggest issue with X's and O's Saturday without Urban there is the special teams. He's very active in special teams. When to block a punt, when to return a punt, when to pooch. That's probably where they'll miss him. But this is the 15th-ranked TCU team against the 5th-ranked Ohio State team. So Ohio State has better players.
You know, Jerry, you look at Northwestern, and after the first series on Saturday, you thought, okay, this is a continuation of what you saw in the opener. This is the Northwestern team you expected to see. And then Duke did it again. Number one, what happened? And number two, regarding Fitz's comments this week comparing RPOs, run-pass options, to communism, buried beneath all the amusement of his comments, does he have a point about the rules and the way the rules are sort of broken and every time you see an RPO?
Okay, first things first. Yeah, they got off to a fast start against Duke. You know, I am in favor of these Purdue Northwestern. In other words, David, I'm in favor of opening up with the conference game. I think we were long overdue as a Big Ten doing that. I do think coaches have to adjust to it. You look at both Purdue and Northwestern coming off that first game. They both put so much energy in. By way of example, like 10 days before the first game, if it's a non-conference game, you might say, hey, let's not get anybody hurt. If you're playing a conference game, it might be 14 days. 10 days before the first game, you might say, let's put the game plan in for the first game. If it's a conference game, it might be you put so much into that first game. So I think both of them have had a little bit of a hangover. I don't know exactly what happened to Northwestern. You know, I don't know where to go with the communism thing. I have to be honest. I mean, I thought it was funny. I made a comment that someone said, hey, everyone's taking this stuff out of, you know, I said something like, I don't think Northwestern's admissions would be very happy. I don't know where that thing's going. Does Fritz have a point? Yeah, he has a point, but not Monday before Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever day it was, before the third game. If you want to change the rule,
right.
change them during the offseason. It sounds like, he's getting ready to play a team that runs RPOs or, you know, this is, you know, why now are we talking about 2.5 or 3 yards? And if it is such an advantage to the offense, which he is insinuating, you would agree, right?
Yes.
Well, then why don't you run it?
why not take advantage? Yeah.
Okay. He said he was, but they don't do RPOs. Well, they do very few of them. They don't live on them like Penn State and some other places. So I think he's got a point, but, you know, who wants to hear that before the third game after losing to Duke?
Maybe after losing to Duke, that's what you want to talk about.
Well, there is a theory, you know, we all coaches have like 20 minutes, and if they use it up, then they can leave. You know, if they just ramble and their press conference is 20 minutes because someone else is coming in behind them, like the coordinator, just ramble for 20 and get out of there. I mean, that's a strategy that a lot of coaches use.
This segment of the Mully and Haw Show brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Jerry, you mentioned the Purdue game kind of in passing. That blew my mind. I went to the Northwestern game, and I came home, and I was just kind of, that's a pity. You know, they had a lead, and it wasn't very good. It wasn't a very good performance. And I'm watching, and I thought, wow, now the big win is even undermined. I mean, how did that happen to Purdue? I thought we decided that they had a ton of talent and they had the young kid. So I didn't see enough of that game to judge it, but that score blew my mind.
Molly, I'll say two things. Northwestern will be back just like they were back last year. I mean, right. This is vintage things. I mean, just, you know, it's like, it reads like a history book. You know, this isn't new ground. This is old ground. Purdue, see, here's what we thought about Purdue. I don't know what you guys thought. We thought Purdue was in great hands with Jeff Brom. We thought the new facility was a boost. The new commitment was a boost. The energy. They're ranked in the 20s in recruiting today for the 2019 season. They're usually ranked in the 60s or 70s. This program, if Jeff Brom stays, is on great footing. We knew they were going to take a step back because for all the things that you say bad about Darryl Hazel left him some good defensive players. They won last year on defense, not on Jeff Brom's offensive mind. They will eventually win based on Jeff Brom's offensive mind and Nick Holt if he stays as the defensive coordinator. Now, did I think they'd lose to Eastern Michigan? No, I think that's hangover and dumb penalties. But I have to tell you, I'm as confident can be that Purdue is on the right track. It's not easy. I mean, they got Missouri, then Boston College next week. BC's got one of the best teams they've had in 20 years.
You know, Michigan and Michigan State enjoyed different outcomes, far different outcomes over the weekend. Michigan rolls over Western, and Michigan State goes out west. And you kind of predicted, or you talked about, that the late start really got the best of the Spartans, it looked like. I don't know if that's an excuse. I don't know if that factored in. But Herm Edwards and Arizona State beats Michigan State at home. How surprised were you by that? On the other hand, is Michigan got things rolling now?
I was surprised at Michigan State. You know, David, everything adds up. You know, in recruiting, every single written note adds up. Every phone call adds up. In football, everything adds up. The 10:45 start, the fresh legs, the tired legs. I mean, so it had a factor. But Michigan State had a better team. You know, they should have won the game. I don't think Mark D'Antoni would disagree with me. Michigan is still a mystery. I mean, if you look at Michigan since Jim Harbaugh has been there, and you separate all the easy wins from all the losses, statistically, you will find their average on offense and average on defense. Everyone has this reputation that they have this great defense. They gave up almost 200 yards against Notre Dame. We talked about this last week. 200 of 300 yards within 9 plays. If you look at the South Carolina bowl game, they gave up 5 big plays. The defense lost the game. So beating Western Michigan, you know, I'm going to wait until they play somebody. And SMU might be worse. So we won't know until they play somebody if they're any better.
Maryland is going to announce the findings on the the horrible death of the player on September 21st. Where are they in between that? I mean, obviously we know that they've, you know, managed to win a couple of football games, but what's going on with that program? What's going on with what you're seeing from them?
Well, Matt Cat and I are very close. We've talked constantly before, as this thing unfolded, and even recently before games. And he's just trying to do best job coaching, obviously, and he's made some changes, which obviously have turned out well on the field. But he's trying to keep the kids first, and what they want to do, how they mourn, and all those kind of things. So he's being real sensitive to that. There's a lot of unknown. I mean, I don't think the coaches don't know any more than the three of us do about what's going to happen with all the information. He's done a really good job. The fact that they beat Texas, again, I think that was a great win. So everything on the field, they play Temple. They're going to be 3-0. They're probably going to be bowl eligible unless the wheels fall off. But all the other stuff's more important, Molly. But I don't think any of us really know what they're doing. Once they close the doors and boards start meeting and lawyers start meeting, we're the last to know.
Jerry, Nebraska football is not always top of mind here in Chicago, but you look at Scott Frost, and I'd say preseason and he getting the job, going back to his alma mater, he was revered and certainly high expectations there. They lose at home against Colorado. That has a way of changing a football fan's, college football fan's mood in a hurry. What was your surprise level, and was that due to Frost's kind of momentum that he had built up?
No, I tell you, if anyone's changed their minds, they're nuts and they're wrong. You can tell. It's not always about winning and losing. I mean, we understand the importance of winning and losing. This is a little bit like Jeff Rahm. When you watch the incredible enthusiasm for Scott, I mean, those people are crazy, okay? I mean, they love this guy. They love Nebraska football. But when you watch the coaches' tape on defense, it looks like nothing we've seen since the network since they've been part of the Big Ten. They're running to the ball. Of course, they miss tackles, and sometimes they miss a line. But that is, he finally gave out black shirts. He gave out 7 of them. The last staff gave them out like they were candy. Everyone had a black shirt. And he's changed the attitude of the players and the game and all that. If I was a Nebraska fan, I'd be so fired up, I wouldn't leave the stadium. I would just sleep there in between games. I mean, he is going to have this thing rolling. He's very, very bright. His offense is unique, and now they lose Adrian Martinez, maybe. They're going to have to play a second-team guy. He's a ways away from being a championship team, but I don't know how anyone could expect any more than what they've done at Nebraska the last 6, 7, whenever they hired him.
We get complaints when we don't ask you about Illinois, Jerry, so here's your obligatory Illinois question. Do we know anything yet? They haven't really – I know they've – they beat Kent State and they beat Western, but what do we know?
And Lovey is back in Chicago on Saturday.
Yeah, we do know this because we've gone to practice. We've seen that program before Lovey got there, and it was a mess. I mean, he is digging himself out of a deep, deep hole. And I tell you one issue with Lovey. He's such a low-key guy. It's almost like, don't you understand how bad this looks? He does, and he knows how bad it looks. And they're getting better, and they're 2-0. And the first half of the season, it looked like the same old stuff, but it's not. It's really better. I think this isn't a very smart schedule when playing South Florida in Soldier Field. I don't know where that idea came,
right.
But I don't think that's a bonanza. South Florida has better players. There's no doubt about it. So if Illinois wins, they're going to upset a better team. It's going to take a while. It is better, but I have to tell you, from us covering them, when they fired Lon Zook, it has spiraled down and hasn't stopped since. That was the worst decision they made when they fired Ron, and they're still paying for it. And we see Michigan that has fired every coach since Lloyd Carr. When you start firing 2 or 3 coaches in a row after 3 years at a program, what do people expect?
Yeah, that's exactly.
You can't recruit consistently that way. You can't send a message that's about stability and continuity and all those things that matter.
What's the prospect going to say as the coach is talking to him after he replaced the coach that was there 3 years? Oh, I'm going to believe this guy? The last guy only had 3 years. Why should I believe that this guy's going to have any longer? I think the kids know more than the administration half the time. Because the kids know how difficult it is. They have friends that are playing on winning programs, and they see what they get, and they see how they act, and they see how they're getting bigger, stronger, faster, and they see their facilities. The kids know what's going on. I shouldn't call them kids. The student athletes know more than administrators what it's like to be a coach and what it's like to be a player.
Great stuff, Jerry. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Take care.
That's Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network analyst. Great stuff there from him.
Passionate. He always brings it.
Yeah. I love talking to Jerry. I also love talking to Ozzie Guillen, and that's what we're going to do next. We'll bring in Ozzie. We'll talk some baseball with him. We'll ask him about a couple of Sox players, a couple of decisions they have to make. But let's talk to him, too, about some of the Cubs stuff, because Ozzie knows baseball inside and out. What happens when you're playing this many games in a row, and how do you
Should fatigue matter to a baseball team in September?
Sounds like a good question for Ozzie Guillen, and we'll ask it next. Mully and Hall on the Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly!